I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today on Midday Culture Connections, we turn our focus to the vibrant community in Baltimore and around the globe known as neo-soul. It began as a musical genre in the 1980s and early 90s with a musical rhetoric that draws from jazz, funk, electronic, and pop, with African music and African culture at its heart. But from hair care to self-care, from diet to fashion, neo-soul has evolved into much more than just a musical designation. The neo-soul lifestyle connects many African Americans to the riches of African history and heritage. Joining me and Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland is the acclaimed singer and arts activist Navasha Daya. We'll also hear from Jamila Banu, a successful entrepreneur and founder of a natural hair and beauty care products company. First, the news. Welcome, I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland. Today, a conversation about the neo-soul movement. In the 1980s and early 90s, musical artists like Erykah Badu, Lauryn Hill, Indy Ari, and others came to define a musical genre. Here's a tune by Erykah Badu. It's called On and On.
What a day, what a day. Peace and blessings manifest with every lesson learned. Give him knowledge, worth your wealth, then it would be well earned. And we were made in his image, then call us by our names. Most intellects do not believe in God, but they fear us just the same.
But neo-soul has evolved into something much more than just music. Today, neo-soul encompasses a lifestyle that's premised on spirituality, self-care, and diet and even beauty care products made with natural ingredients. Dr. Sherry Parks is on the faculty of the University of Maryland College Park and the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. How you doing, Sherry?
Good
to
see you.
And joining Sherry and me here in Studio A, a wonderful singer, producer, holistic wellness practitioner, and arts activist, Navasha Daya. Welcome back. It's good
hey,
to see
hey,
you.
Hey.
So we are streaming our program today from Studio A on the WYPR Facebook page, thanks to our good buddy Jamila Krempel. You can also join our conversation about neo-soul. There's a vibrant neo-soul community here in Baltimore. If you're part of it, give us a buzz, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WYPR.org, and our Twitter handle, at midday WYPR. So, Navasha, this is a term that got, coined by a producer, I guess, back in the 80s and 90s. What's it mean to you, neo-soul?
Well, I mean, neo means new soul. So I guess, and it's interesting because I came out as an artist in my early 20s, straight out of college, in the neo-soul movement. So I came out when Indy Ari first got a record deal. I was out already, and Erykah Badu was out, and Lauryn Hill, and Jill wasn't out yet. It was D'Angelo,
that's
actually,
Jill
and
Scott.
Maxwell. Jill Scott. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Jill Scott, excuse me. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know who she is, right? But anyway, and then D'Angelo and all those folk. So neo-soul to me is really a modern-day concept in regards to using live instruments in a time where electric, production was really popular. And people like Erykah Badu sampled a lot of old soul music. And so it was like a movement, a vibe. It opened people up to hearing, being connected to music from the 60s and being connected to that style and that vibe. And it created, I know we're going to talk more deeply into the concept of what happened in the world and what was going on at shows and the open mic scene and things like that. But it really just provided a space for people who play live instruments to be considered. Because in the industry, you have to have a genre name, unfortunately. And if you don't have that, it's hard to market you and it's hard to get you a Grammy and be in industry. So that's the unfortunate part. But it was more so built upon, to be honest, like Roy Hargrove kind of style music. So Roy Hargrove is one of the people, his style of music, people just kind of, like Erykah Badu, sung over that style. So that's what made it kind of a new kind of soul thing.
Yeah, and Sherry Parks, I mean, in terms of its usage, it has not been without controversy, this
right.
notion of neo-soul.
Well, I mean, because that idea of neo being new, and this is a movement that very intentionally reaches back to the old ways, and the idea that they have to reach over the idea of new is really important. So, I mean, it's, as you said, often it's associated with music, and we have to remember, those of us that are old enough, that we were talking about radio. And that radio audiences were very fragmented, particularly then when radio was the only way to introduce new music. And Top 40 was really important. And so having new music was important. And soul had become kind of an archaic term. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was that this is something new. These are new artists. This is not, you know, the Otis Redding, I'm a soul man type of music. And so it is very controversial among people within the movement. And notice we're saying movement, not music is at the core of it, but it is a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I Googled neo soul, you know, you go to the Wikipedia entry and stuff. It's all about music, mm-hmm. Navasha. It's not about lifestyle, but it clearly is something that encompasses a whole spiritual premise, a mm-hmm. sort of fundamental worldview that mm-hmm. is based in spirituality. But it's manifested in diet, in fashion, in mm-hmm. products and stuff. Did it take a while for the sort of musical association to broaden, or mm-hmm. was it associated with these other aspects right from the very top?
Good question. Because when I was asked to be on the show, I just got tickled because I was like, I really came out in that movement. Like my band, Fertile Ground, that I co-founded, we were an underground band. So we weren't mainstream. So you have mainstream artists like Erykah Badu, then you have underground like myself at the time. And we were really in depth in that movement. Like I came out of that movement, to be honest. So it was more so, it was a lifestyle, but it came out of more of like, once again, I want to honor the 60s. So like the vibe of poetry, like The Last Poets, Gil Scott-Heron, my cousin, and like it was more around that kind of vibe and bringing that back. So we had open mic poetry got really big after Love Jones, the movie. So that was a real good backdrop to make people feel like, oh, this is hip, because people had to be invited and to feel comfortable about something new. So you have like Erykah Badu wearing hair wraps, which is Afrocentric or Muslim, but really she was wearing it from an Afrocentric perspective. I wore feathers in my hair, I had things and beads in my hair. You know, people did this already back in the day. You know, everyone did this, but it was a returning of that and kind of showing that it was hip. It wasn't around a social issue, which is the difference between the 60s and even now with the soul music I put out now and the 60s soul music. It wasn't around a social issue. It was really about an aesthetic and a vibe of feeling comfortable about yourself, feeling cool, you know, and incense and poetry and expressing yourself. And people who normally would not eat vegetarian food or care about Afrocentricity kind of considering it. They didn't wear it like it is now with Wakanda, but the prince, but they still were amenable. They were like, oh, okay, I can digest this. I want to go see that, you know, I want to go see Navash. I want to go see Erykah Badu. I want to go see, and they felt open to it versus going to see like hip hop, like Mary J. Blige and things like that. It was almost like a way of palette, given a palette of how to understand and receive this look and this style, where you had soul music remnants with live instrumentation and people looking kind of earthy.
Mm-hmm. So and it, this is concurrent. This is contemporary to the rise of hip hop. Right?
Yes, roughly so. Yeah. And that's really important because, I want to reach back to something that Navasha was talking about, that when we talk about African American life and culture, you will often find that it is not very much compartmentalized. And I don't mean to say that in a deficit. African American culture tends not to have these boxes, and so spirituality and music and what we might consider secular life all is in a very fluid situation. So even they're saying this is about music, but it is also about life, is itself an Afrocentric perspective. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that hip hop was speaking about a specific type of urban life. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you had artists, some of whom were urban, but some of whom were also rural, who were mm-hmm. going back and farming and doing things that were very different from hip hop. Hip hop made what we might call an Afro-pessimistic turn, where we are showing the gritty, really awful life that people are having to live. And at the same time, soul or neo-soul was saying, but yes, we have all these traditions, though, that are very rich and wonderful. And at the same time, we want to live. So I say, how do you honor the ancestors with diet and mm-hmm. still live longer than our grandparents did? Because we're honoring them, but we're eating more diverse foods because we can. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
really is a contemporary movement because it does what you can do now. You can take the part that is enriching and leave aside, even though that's controversial, the part that may be detrimental to your health or your well-being.
Taylor Branch is the executive producer of a wonderful new movie called King in the Wilderness, which talks about the last 3 years of Dr. King's life. And one of the points that a couple of the folks in the movie make, and these are all contemporaries of Dr. King, talking mm-hmm. about their personal experience with him in the movement and as friends of the family, was that when King went to India to work with Gandhi, he came back and he realized that there were certain things about nonviolence and certain things about the Gandhian philosophy that he could adopt, but others he couldn't. For example, fasting. He said fasting wasn't going to work in the black community. I couldn't do that because people weren't going to fast. But they could do sit-ins, mm-hmm. you know. So he learned sit-ins from Gandhi, but he said, you know, the fasting, and King himself fasted mm-hmm. sometimes, more than once, and a couple of times he did it to move people in the SCLC mm-hmm. Towards his point of view on a certain thing, which is interesting. But he said that that's culturally wasn't going to work. Is the cultural when it came to fashion and the look and how women and men were wearing mm-hmm. hair and stuff. I mean, coming out of the 60s and Black Power movement, mm-hmm. you know, which is a sort of splinter group from the SCLC and Dr. King's nonviolence, was any of that political?
So I want to stop and say something about the fasting. So in India, they have very specific culture in regards to spirituality that everyone kind of unites in, right? And they have a specific diet that everyone agrees on. In the black community, because we were from a continent that was diverse and huge, you have people who are vegetarians in a certain part of Africa, people who ate meat. So when you deal with African Americans with diet and even religion, to be honest, in uniting us, it's kind of complicated. And we haven't really, to me, got through that complication, because mm-hmm. it's like this or this versus we are all united and we need to be united. And that was kind of devised by the enslavement of our people mm-hmm. and really a strategic method that was used to enslave us and keep us enslaved at that time. And so when we deal with diet, it's not that we don't fast. I was raised fasting. I was raised vegetarian, actually, and my parents were conscious, and I have family members who are vegetarian. So it's to say we're really diverse as a people. So if it were a part of our culture and we were in our root culture, it probably would be easy to organize that. India is in their root culture. They weren't enslaved, taken to another country. So therefore, it's not the same comparison. So I just want to say that.
Yeah.
I just want to mark something that she said that's really important, because in the Western imagination, Africa is one place. I mean, some people
right.
think it is a country.
It's a ginormous continent.
And certainly the West Africans, the majority of slaves came from West Africa. Slavery was a galvanizing experience. And there are all these conversations about, is it black to do this? Is it black to do that? And they mean that kind of monolith. And it's never been a monolith, but now very intentionally people are sorting out, well, what tribe are we talking about? What country
yes.
are you talking about? And that's a much more sophisticated way of looking at one's heritage. And that galvanizing experience of Africa of slavery is still very much there. But can we reach back and go beyond it? That's exactly what we're calling Neo-Soul is trying to do.
And then as it relates to, I just want to touch on that real quick, because it's just more respectful to think of it that way. But then as far as the looks and things, I feel like it gave an aesthetic. And it was almost like a buildup of when Spike Lee said, wake up, at the end of his movie School Days. It was, to me, the visual version of that. So, for instance, with my group that I co-founded, Fertile Ground, I sung conscious music. I wrote a song called Peace and Love. I wrote a song called Spiritual War. I wrote a song called a whole lot of things, Changing Woman. I'm trying to think of all the songs. But they were always conscious. So we were known as a conscious band, almost like spiritual jazz. It was kind of complicated. But, you know, you had Erykah Badu dealing with four quarters and dealing with some spiritual science and things like that. You had people who were in, and Lauryn Hill did the same thing. So you had a space where you can talk about depth in a kind of hip music. So it wasn't like I want to say it was the deepest time at all. But it was a space where people could kind of say, I'm going to be deep now. To be honest, that's what made it easy for me as an artist, because I was born kind of like thinking about deep, you know, kind of spiritual science kind of things. So it gave a way for me to come out as an artist where people can, you know, take me on. I was made fun of for being a vegetarian. I was made fun of for wearing African garb when I was younger, for having my parents having locks, they said I ate grass. I mean, I was introduced to how to make tofu. I know how to make tempeh, how to make, you know, I mean, I was raised in all that, and it wasn't hip in Cleveland, Ohio. And so this movement, actually, people were like, oh, wow. You know, I was a teacher in some ways. Like, it was was something where people were like going back to that. Like Erykah Badu studied Queen, oh Lord, I can't think of her name right now, Queen Afua, who did natural raw diet. People, all people who are conscious pulled her behind in, taught her about crystals, showed her all these things. So she was like, you know, she was mainstream, signed by Kedar, who was president of Motown at that time. It's rare to get signed nowadays by the president. And Diary got signed by Kedar. Those are the last two people I know in the Neo Soul movement who got signed by the
major
president.
Label. Major label. Commercial director. Success.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they were able
who
to
coined
beat themselves.
The term, Neo Soul.
Yeah,
yeah,
Kedar.
Yeah, Kedar
right.
did.
Yeah.
And so ask it right. And so for me, it was like, it was still industry though. Don't forget that it was still about making money and how do we palette this. So as an independent artist underground, really at that time, not independent like I am now, it was interesting because I wanted to do many albums with my hand coming above the ground, like, hello, we exist. So it was still commercial to a certain degree, but things like the movie, it kind of made people say, okay, we're going to be conscious. We're going to be deep. We're going to go see fertile ground and be deep and wear feathers in our hair and you know, be conscious about our food we put in our body. So they kind of brought that energy. Mm-hmm. So people weren't normally just walking around living life as usual. There was something they could attach to that was hip and cultural, that and everyone, I would go to Europe and perform and it was still the same kind of vibe. It was like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean, Europe has other countries have a whole different thing than America. America's just, anyway, don't want to talk, that's another show. But, it, you know, with America at least, it made us a little more depth. It gave more depth.
I want to just point one thing out, is that there is a relationship between neo-soul and the academy and intellectualism, that artists that she's talking about, and the mindset is much more welcome in the academy than hip-hop has been welcome in the academy until very recently.
Navasha Daya is a singer, songwriter, producer, certified practitioner of holistic wellness. Dr. Sherry Parks is at the University of Maryland for the time being, and she is the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. Dr. Sherry Parks, soon to be in the senior management of MICA, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. We're also going to hear a little bit later from Jamila Banu. She's the founder of Oyen Handmade, a line of hair and beauty products sold internationally and based right here in Baltimore. I spoke with her earlier this morning. More on Neo Soul when we return. We're listening to some music of Jaguar Wright. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the Facebook page at WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. More on Neo Soul in just a bit. Stick with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up on our program tomorrow, a day of reflection as we honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the 50th anniversary of his assassination. Congressman Elijah Cummings joins me, as well as the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, a pastor, community organizer, and founder of Arida's Cross Freedom School. Attorney Maisha Braden, she's the director for the Criminal Justice Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, and pastor and King scholar, the Reverend Dr. C. Anthony Hunt. They'll all be here. We'll talk about the resonance of the civil rights movement for the movement for social justice today. That conversation coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, it's Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. We are discussing the neo-soul movement, which began in the mid-90s, late 80s, early 90s, which has evolved into a lifestyle that encompasses African identity, cultural tradition, and spirituality through music, spoken word, and holistic wellness. Sherry Parks is an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland College Park and the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. Navasha Daya is here as well. She's a singer, a songwriter, a producer, an activist. She is also the co-founder and director of the Healing and Performing Arts of the Youth Resiliency Institute. You are welcome to join our conversation. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. You can send us an email, midday@WYPR.org, and you can give us a call the old-fashioned way at 410-662-8780. Sherry Parks, before we go on, let's talk a little bit about this new position that you are about to assume at MICA, Maryland Institute College of Art. You'll begin there June 1, but this is an interesting move from you. You're leaving College Park and moving back to Charm City. So tell me what you're going to be doing.
Well, I've almost always lived in the area. People often assume I live in College Park, but I don't. The title is Vice President for Strategic Initiatives, and so I'll be working extending Mica more into the community and building platforms to make that more easy and facing with the city and other entities beyond the college.
Yeah,
well, I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a continuation of a lot of the work you've been doing in College Park, but also even outside of College Park. You're currently the chair of the Greater Baltimore Cultural Alliance,
yes.
which is a network of all the cultural
and NAVASHA's a board member.
Yeah, NAVASHA's a board member. I was a founding board member of that lovely organization back in the day.
And that's what Mica thought. They had seen me playing around in their yard for, for a number of years. Thought, wait a minute.
So I want to talk about fashion as politics. Evidently you want to talk about it too, NAVASHA. That's good. Here's a little clip. I spoke earlier this morning with Jamila Banu. She and her husband Pierre have a wonderful company called Oyen Handmade, which is beauty products, hair care products. They sell them online, and they're all over the place. They're in Target and CVS and Rite Aid. I mean, this is a huge, huge thing. And they have a store two blocks from where we sit here in Charles Village. Pierre, Jamila's husband, a filmmaker, is a wonderful thing. Does wonderful film work here. So we're going to play a clip of Jamila and I talking this morning about this notion of wearing your hair naturally as a political statement. To what extent is the way one wears her hair a political statement?
In our culture, we are judged so completely on the way we look and in our appearance, particularly for women whose appearance is often so closely policed, you know, and there's so much kind of judgment around our beauty and how we present and things like that. And particularly for women with highly textured hair, whose hair does not align with like mainstream perceptions of what kind of hair is considered beautiful, it becomes just a kind of a revolutionary act of self-love to create a beauty and to find a beauty in this hair texture and this wide variety of hair textures that many of us have grown up not believing was beautiful or not being told was beautiful or being encouraged to change fundamentally. To stop changing it or to find ways to embrace it is a revolutionary act.
Where do those metrics, that history of, you know, this is the way you're supposed to look, this is the way you shouldn't look, where does that come from?
It comes from hundreds of years of living in a white supremacist capitalist patriarchy.
Right. Exactly. Right. So this is this imposition of white culture values and white culture notions of beauty on people of color and people of African descent.
Yeah. And it's a thing that, I never fault us and our ancestors or, you know, for, like, seeking to style our hair in ways that approximated the textures of white hair was a survival mechanism. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that I'm mad at my ancestors for ever straightening their hair or that I blame us for inventing relaxers and, you know what I mean? Things like that. I get that it was a way that you could kind of access basic things like employment and survival. Like, it was a necessary thing. And so in that sense, and if you look at it historically, it also can be seen as not just a personal revolution, but also a cultural revolution, also a stance toward freedom. If you remember, the Afro natural hairstyle was a big kind of political statement in the 70s. It was aligned with the Black Power movement. It was a way of
You think Angela Davis.
Exactly.
Right.
And this was a huge step that people were taking to stop straightening their hair. At the time, it was thermal straightening. In my own life trajectory and during the time of the Neo Soul movement, people were moving away from chemical straightening, which was a technological advancement. You know, but also it was tougher on the hair. It was a permanent change. It literally chemically altered the texture of your hair in a way that you couldn't just wash out the straightening the way that you could with thermal straightening if your hair had been pressed. You had to grow it out over time. And many women around the time of the Neo Soul moment had never seen the natural texture of their hair because it had been chemically altered since childhood. And so it was also about learning and relearning its care, how to style it so that you could feel beautiful, how to care for it so that it could be healthy. And this was kind of cultural knowledge that had had almost been lost because of a couple of generations of that new technology of chemical alteration. So it was also a really exciting time for me and for many women who I connected with.
So Navasha, that's got some resonance. Sherry, that's got some resonance. I mean, Sherry, you have a daughter, you know, Kelsey, who's in her early 20s. She's in graduate school in England now. This was an issue, I would imagine, when your daughter is growing up, you know, how she's going to wear her hair, how you're going to wear her hair, how the people she, looked up to were wearing their hair, the movie stars and the music stars and stuff.
Well, and her dilemma was because she's an equestrian and she has to wear a helmet. And so the idea of how do you fit your braids under your helmet actually is an issue for her, and they have to be a certain thinness to fit under her helmet because the helmet assumes that the person wearing the helmet is not African American.
Yeah,
and so, those are kind of issues. This issue is so political. I helped work with a campaign for same-sex marriage in Baltimore and in Prince George's County when we had that referendum, and there had been a campaign that had been written by somebody who, and they were targeting African-Americans, and you may remember that referendum won in part because of the votes of black women. But they had put this campaign in beauty parlors and barbershops. And that was the first thing I changed. I said, you really do not want to wade into black women and hair and borrow that political issue because you're going to lose half your audience no matter what that beautician is doing. If she is straightening hair, you're going to lose what is probably your core audience of what we're calling neo-soul. If she's braiding or twisting hair, then you're going to alienate the other. This is a very divisive issue. And you signal your politics with your hair if you're an African-American woman.
Yeah, you know, in Americana, the wonderful novel by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, it begins with a woman in Princeton, New Jersey. She's faculty member at Princeton going into town to get her hair done, you know, her hair braided, an African American, and it's a 5-hour thing, you know. And as a dumb old white guy, it never dawned on me that it would take that long, you know. It's a really long process to have that done. But it is a political statement, is it not? The way you choose to wear your hair.
Yes, this is very interesting to me because I'm doing a logo for myself, and how I look as an artist has always been very intentional, from the bendies I wear for the chakras to my hair being natural in regards to the form of it. I mean, I dye my hair, but the form of it, and to wear an African indigenous garbs. I knew that I had to look that way, and I still will always look that way. Actually, I realize it's needed even more now. First, I was like, I do some rock outs kind of looks, but I just talked to one of my graphic people today about that. But I have a Fertile Ground had a song called Be Natural about, you know, the hair that came out in the 90s, like 98, 99, and it deals with the hair. It's called Be Natural, and I did it at the end of each show, and it's about being natural in yourself too, because I'm dealing with the soul, being a human, because we're dealing with, you know, robots right now. I'm about to deal with that anyway. And so, you know, but how I look is a side of resistance to natural culture, and I've always been able to do that because I've really never worked with anyone where they required me to look a certain way. I've been a very independent person my whole journey as an adult, and so I'm able to look I feel like I'm a side of resistance. I'm wearing mud cloth today. My hair is locked up, and traditionally locks represented priesthood in India and in Africa, and so it's in Rasta culture. You know, I'm not a Rasta in that sense, but you know, it's a sign of spirituality actually. And so for me, when I went,
just for folks who aren't looking on Facebook,
okay.
Describe what locked up means.
Locked is like, you know, Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. So you have the Rasta lock where your hair just naturally grows and you don't twist it. And then you have the kind where you twist it. And even Kemet, which is the original word of Egypt in Africa, you have pharaohs and people who had their hair locked in coils. So it's a style of our people that we've had since, you know, ancient times. And we're really into beauty as a people. As African Americans, I mean, every culture is like that. But because our hair is this texture, we can actually do more with our hair in regards to styles and colors and claying and things like that. So to me, it's a side of resistance to be natural. And nowadays, it's hip. And Neo Soul helped to foster, bring that in where, you know, wearing an African hair wrap. On my first album, Field Songs, I wore a head wrap. And people didn't do that. I was made fun of for doing that too. And they thought only you were Muslim if you did that. It's like, no, it's African. People didn't have any education because of the racism of this country and the way I was built. People had an anti-Africa because they had to, because if you dealt with the beauty and power of Africa, then you would lose the power over these people that you enslaved to build this country for free. and benefit from your trust funds and businesses that exist today. So as a side of resistance in regards to being natural, there's something that happens to you, because I had relaxer in my hair because, you know, you get influenced. And I remember cutting it out and touching my hair and saying, I love myself. I love myself. I love you. And talking to my hair. I had to do that. And I was raised with natural hair and raised with locks in Africa. And I still had to do that because of the psychological warfare against African-Americans as it relates to our natural image that God made us to look like. So I just want to say that as Jamila, who I love, her and Pierre, they're my people. And Pierre is also a visual artist as well, and a DJ and a whole lot of stuff. But just what they do and the imagery, because now it's hip. Back in the day, you didn't have these products. You had Madam C.J. Walker and her movement. But Oyin is very important, and other people who make natural hair products, because now it's mainstream. You can find the products to make your hair coily, straight, move it, mousse it, whatever, in the regular stores now. And so they are very important to this movement, because they were raised in that movement too. They know about it from New York, and they were around, and Pierre and them were around, Erykah Badu when she first came out. They know those folk. And so you saw the transition of the natural acceptance that wasn't there before.
Here's Jamila again. We talked earlier this morning. This is Jamila Banu. She and her husband own and run Oyin handmade products. Mm-hmm. Talking about the community and the way beauty is being redefined. It's part of your company and the aspiration of your company, and perhaps part of the Neo Soul movement. Also have to do with changing people's metrics for beauty, changing what people's expectations of beauty should be for men and women.
Definitely. 100%. And this is where the community really plays the part. It's watching the conversation move from, you know, message boards, from Web 1.0, when we were typing out and sharing recipes and maybe uploading a picture, but really kind of like writing tutorials and creating blogs and things like that, and then moving that into the blogosphere. And then when YouTube came to prominence and people started to do video tutorials for each other, and now Instagram, like, we've got access to kind of this constant glossy magazine parade of different kinds of beauty, and people get to share their own process, they get to share their own results, and they get to get affirmed by each other. And that is huge. A big part of my own journey was my sister was the only other person I knew with natural hair when I was growing up. And it wasn't until I went to college and there was kind of a critical mass of women with natural hair that I understood, I don't have to just wear two cornrows, because that was all I knew. And it was part of my childhood. And it felt like, you know, natural hair was a child thing, because all the women I knew who were grown had straight hair. So it was kind of a rite of passage. So it was wonderful to go, but I had to go hundreds of miles away before I saw grown women with natural hair. Now, in the palm of your hand, you can access a huge amount of style ideas, care tips, product recommendations, product reviews, and the community is reshaping that sense of what is beautiful. The community is having conversations with each other, affirming each other, giving each other, you know, likes and thumbs up, and thanking each other for sharing the info. And so there's just incredibly vibrant means by which we're slowly shifting the needle for each other about what it is that we think is beautiful.
Jamila Banu, we spoke this morning. She's the founder of Oyin Handmade. Sherry Parks?
Well, she said two things that I think that are really important. One, that she went to college, and that's where, I mean, the role of the academy, and obviously I'm going to pick that up, is where a lot of people found a community, and that was important. And there was a time, it has become mainstream enough now that you don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. But 10 years ago, you almost marked yourself as an academic if you were, you know, past 25 and you were wearing natural hair. That's what it was. And then the idea of what I call virtual blackness is that if you don't know people in your community, you can go online and find other ways in order to perform your blackness. I did that when I was looking for, my hair used to be a bit longer, and I was looking for a medium length style for natural hair. Mm-hmm. I went online and looked at hairstyles, and that would have been impossible, obviously, 25 years ago.
Let's see if we can grab one phone call before we take a break. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing your name, but is it Benoit in Baltimore? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm calling because it appears that this is another exercise where we're only discussing what appears to be something new. And it's not new. And if you look at historical documents, you'll see women and men wearing their hair unnatural. And one of the fallacies that we're not discussing is that we as black folks, we discuss you're not black unless. And it's really does more harm than it does good. Because myself, in particular, it was you only dated women who reflected your same cultural belief, and if it was natural, that was it. And you learn that it doesn't matter what your how you do your hair or what clothes you wear. It's what goes on in your mind, because you can be the most Afrocentric person that in your community and be just as treacherous and untrustworthy as you can be. And it's not new in terms of wearing your hair natural or using natural products, because when my mother and father, they were close to being sharecroppers, and my father's brother was a sharecropper for up until the 50s. But naturalness is not new. It didn't. This movement that supposedly started in the 70s didn't start in the 70s.
All right. Well, thanks for that comment. I appreciate it.
Well, and I think we would agree with you. I mean, that at the very beginning of the show, we troubled that idea of it being new, and that it really is a reclamation of something that always has been there, very much so. And I agree, there's much less divisiveness about hair and how you style your hair than there was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. There's some real conversations about what was better, and each side believes that it is better. But many more women are accepting of another style than there was. Because there are women who do their hair naturally out of deep belief system, and as Navasha said, some do it because it's a style.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, and we will come back and talk more about the neo-soul movement. You're listening to Midday. It's Midday Culture Connections, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the Facebook page at WYPR. We are here with Dr. Sherry Parks. She's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman, and Navasha Dia, a wonderful singer, producer, and activist. Here's some music by Navasha Dia, Iwapele.
It's about your destiny. It's not about the power you seek. It's about your destiny. Be good, act good, play good, gentle character, be sweet, be gentle, be kind, gentle character.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, and it's the Midday Culture Connections today here in Studio A with Dr. Sherry Parks and the singer, producer, and activist Navasha Dia. We are talking about neo-soul as a movement and as a lifestyle. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page, so you can catch how beautiful the two women sitting across the table actually look. They're not only smart, they're really beautiful. I am so outgunned in this conversation, let me tell you. I want to play one more clip of Jamila Banu, the founder of Oyen Handmade, which has a store right here in Charles Village. Mm-hmm. And Sherry, actually, you've pointed out to me that there's a lot of folks who consider this area of town kind of the black business district, because we're talking about like Charles Street from North Avenue up to 25th, something mm-hmm. like that.
Well, yeah, they are clustered right around here. And that's the interesting thing, is that they're not hiding there. But from one perspective, they're hiding in plain sight, because you may walk down the street and you just see a hair place and you don't recognize that there's a whole culture going on there. And they're right there. But people in Baltimore, if they're not part of the movement or near it, don't know that.
Yeah. I was interested when Jamila and I talked earlier this morning about this very interesting relationship between her business and her customers. Jamila Banu, welcome. It's good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to see you, too.
So let's talk about your company, Oyen Handmade. Oyen is a Yoruba word. What's it mean?
It means honey.
And how does that become the basis for a very successful beauty products, hair products, self-care products?
Well, it means honey, which is an amazing ingredient for natural hair and skincare. It's a natural antimicrobial. It is incredibly moisturizing. It's a humectant, which means it helps hair and skin to draw moisture from the environment. So particularly for highly textured hair care, which tends to be dry, it's a wonderful ingredient because it helps to hydrate and keep the hair moisturized. It also symbolizes the elements of sweetness and love and joy, which are things that we try to incorporate into both our marketing and our, you know, the way that our products smell. And just we want to incorporate that into the daily acts of self-care.
And that's another dimension of the Neo Soul community, to the extent that,
definitely,
you know, we can talk about a community.
Yes.
That's because it's certainly not monolithic by any means. But the relationship between you and your customers, mm-hmm, I mean, the typical American, and I guess that means the white supremacist, you know, old-fashioned corporate relationship with a customer, mm-hmm, is financial.
Right.
It's you know, we're going to make stuff as cheaply as possible, right, and sell it for as much as we think we can get away with.
Right.
I mean, that's how the shareholders are kept happy.
Right.
Your relationship with your with people who buy and use your products is premised on a whole different notion.
It is. It's premised on, well, for one thing, we use the products that we make as well, so we are our customers. So there's a sense in which we all are a part of a community together. And also because people tend to come to natural hair products in the midst and as a part of a journey of self-discovery and of self-education. So we get to be a part of that journey. We get to be a part of people learning something empowering about themselves, and we get to be a part of them discovering their own beauty in a new way. And that's incredibly exciting, and it's an incredible privilege. It's an incredibly intimate relationship that we get to build with our customers. We're super thankful for it.
And Nivashadaya, the movement here, the Neo Soul community, of mm-hmm, which you are considered a founder and a, mm-hmm, you know, a reigning diva in the Neo Soul community.
The word they would use would be queen.
Yeah, so. Queen. Yeah, that's fine. I'm good with that. I'm down with that. It's vibrant. I mean, it's a real, mm-hmm, thing, right? I mean, this is not, it may have started underground when you were, mm-hmm, back in the day when you were doing Fertile Ground and those kinds of musical projects, but mm-hmm, boy, it's not underground anymore.
It's definitely above ground, and it's, because my first album was called Rebirthed Above Ground on purpose. So it definitely is above ground, and it's very accepted. So I just want to comment a little bit about the gentleman that called. So you have Fannie Lou Hamer, who is a major activist who had permed hair. I work in public housing. Most of the families have, you know, straight hair, some natural. And so I just want to also put in the conversation to not, as my husband says, to not be elitist African, you know, mm-hmm, like to be Afrocentrically elite, and not, you know, because there's a benefit of knowing that culture. And just because your hair is straight or blonde or red or blue does not determine your consciousness. So I just want to qualify his comment because I understand what he means, because it is a style. And so I used to assume if someone had locks that they had a certain level of consciousness, and that's not the case anymore. It used to be the case when I was a child and younger doing Kwanzas and stuff like that, that you knew about certain things, but it doesn't qualify that. So it's actually an entry point to go deeper. It's an entry point of accepting your true self. Jamila, I want to comment, went to Spelman. So that's another aspect. I went to Morgan. So there's another aspect of, like, what I talked about, Spike Lee, of finding yourself at a HBCU, not to go, you know, I'm not against any university, but just speaking about the self-discovery you have in college, or if you're a predominantly white one, that's a whole other level of just joining the Black Student Union and learning who am I and what am I about, and just kind of engaging the diversity of our people. So as we speak about the Neo Soul movement, there is a diversity in looks and a self-acceptance. That's the most important. And then from there, you kind of go as you may, if you, as long as you know who you are and you accept yourself. You might, like Erykah Badu changed up and had straight hair. So did Jill Scott. I mean, it shifted up because at that point, they knew who they were and they were like, okay, I'm going to go back and forth. And Erykah goes back and forth. I pretty much stay who I am, actually, as an artist. I just can't help it. And in India's changed that. She cuts it off, puts it on. You know, she does that kind of thing. But
it's India
Ari. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Like, y'all know. Okay, yeah. Yes. India.
Because they're all friends of yours.
Yeah, well, yeah. So India Ari cuts her hair off sometimes, and she found a lock wig and a braid wig. So now you have these wigs now where you can, you know, you can kind of demonstrate this style, but it's really about activism and equity in regards to diversity of hairstyle. So it's like acceptance of this as a mainstream style and as a menu of buffet of choosing. Before, it wasn't something you could choose from. You had to have your hair straight. And if you didn't, you weren't look business. If your hair was natural, you had to pull it back in a bun to look like you were professional. So what does that mean in society?
Yeah. We have a comment on Twitter. Love the show. FYI, it's also political for women of a certain age, mine, to allow our hair to grow white, gray, and silver.
Sure is.
I am proud of my age and my look. We are beautiful too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting.
That's very true. Notion.
And that decision, you know.
And people don't think of hair as a political statement, but hair is a political statement. I remember the first time I showed up at work with my hair braided. It was, and I was the only woman in the department at the time. It was very controversial and got a big reaction. There are two things I want to talk about, because Navasha is saying there are many ways to be black. And that sounds like an obvious statement, but it is not. This is a new moment in America when there are many ways to be black, because that cohesiveness was very much orchestrated for again, political purposes. And then one of the reasons I wanted to do this show is that the what we're calling the Neo-Soul movement in Baltimore is very vibrant and very alive and very active in the community, and they need to be recognized as that.
You mentioned earlier in the show this notion of Afro-pessimism.
Mm.
Is the counterbalance to that Afro-futurism? Is there a thing of Afro-optimism? I mean, with Black Panther and Wakanda and everything on everybody's minds now, because the whole universe has seen it, you know, is there for the next generation of, you know, for the kids who are now in their teens and 20s who are making their first record like you did, a couple of years ago, Navasha, you know, where is this headed?
Well, I mean, I'm very fond of you, Tom, but basically I'm going to say it would be very Western of you to put those in opposing situations like that and compartmentalize it.
I'm Mr. Binary. That's a dumb white binary guy. That's me.
I did not say that.
I did.
But they are very different. And while it is important to recognize the horror that African-Americans and Africans have gone through, at the same time, it is really important to see the resilience and optimism and joy that are there. And that is probably the more holistic way of viewing it. But there are these strains within that, yes.
And Navasha, when you describe yourself as a wellness practitioner, what does that mean and how does that inform your understanding of Neo-Soul?
Oh, wow. So I'm an ordained interfaith minister. I practice and teach Reiki. And I'm also indigenous spiritual practitioner. I guess they would say, I wouldn't say the word shaman to myself, but it's in a sense of understanding the spirit world and how to look at someone holistically to resolve whatever conflict is in their body, disease, mental illness, physical pain. So I'm trained to be able to address clients that way. I don't purposely have a public practice. It's more by word of mouth at this time. I guess people know it now, but why PR. But anyway, but I do have a lot of students.
Is it connected to Neo-Soul?
It is definitely. It's connected to me. And so therefore, as a person, in my music, I express it. So I guess some artists didn't choose to show their depth. So as an artist, I've always researched who else was like this. Alice Coltrane, she was very, very spiritual as well. Or, you know, I talked to Ledisi, and Ledisi, who's another person that came up, the Leo Soul, she got the other last deal from a record label. But anyway, but, you know, she came up, you know, with me as well. So you have people who are conscious about spirituality. And I think that that's the part that maybe that is because I think I was raised different. So I was raised like chanting Om and meditating and things that weren't even normally accepted in my school. People only knew Islam and Christianity. And I was raised learning Native American, you know, African spirituality and Hinduism and thoroughly in it. Like, that's
so
kind of
a final thought before we got to call it a day.
And the idea that a black woman can do self-care and can reach deeply into her spirituality to take care not only of her body, but her spirit is, I think, something that the Neo-Soul movement has pulled forward, because I wrote a whole book about how self-sacrificing black women are supposed to be.
Yeah,
it was a continuation. To be honest, it's a continuation. So the elders that came to my shows when I was in my 20s, who were in their 60s and 70s, were excited because they felt that at that moment, the identity of what we came from was being reintroduced again. So it was a reintroduction.
The singer, the songwriter, the producer, and the activist, Navasha Dia. Dr. Sherry Parks is here. She is, for the next 2 months, an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland, College Park. She will join the senior leadership team of the Maryland Institute College of Art in June. Her book's called Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. We will have a website, wypr.org/midday, that connects to the work of both of these fantastic women. That's it for us today. Join us tomorrow for a reflection on the 50th anniversary of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Our panel will include pastor and community organizer Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, attorney Maisha Braden, the director of the Criminal Justice Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, and Reverend Dr. C. Anthony Hunt. He is a local pastor and King Scholar. I will also speak with Congressman Elijah Cummings. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. Thanks to Joe Squared for providing lunch. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. Thanks for listening. Out of the Blocks is up next after a break for news at the top of the hour. Here's some more music of Erykah Badu. This is a tune called Didn't You Know. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.